So, Berto, let's do an episode where we just do tough or bluffs. What do you say?
Tough.
Good. This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your loyal host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm chair of the Couple and Family Therapy Program at Antioch University, Seattle, and I'm also a licensed psychotherapist.
My name is Humberto Castañeda, and I do rain dances.
We want people to become patrons of the podcast. We're still on our Patrons of the Podcast pledge drive, so go to patreon.com and become a patron of the podcast by pledging a certain amount of funds each month. You get certain things like exclusive episodes and this sort of thing. And just an announcement, Berto has promised me, now that he's back from Colombia, to provide us with a passworded feed that you can get on your podcatcher.
That's right. The password is O.
O?
O.
That's a really short... Is that O?
It's capital O.
So, but for now, if you're a patron, you have to go to patreon.com and go to the creators tab or the creators post tab, and you have access to secret YouTube videos. And my cat is yawning, is meowing.
Meowing, meowing, yawning.
All right, tough or bluff, Berto. This is actually not tough or bluff. Chances of dying among sports and recreational activities. What's more dangerous? What is more likely to kill you? Is it hang gliding or skydiving?
Hang gliding or skydiving? Oh, my goodness. I would have thought skydiving. I'm going to go with hang gliding because...
Hang gliding?
Hang gliding. Here's why I'm going to go with hang gliding. I think what happens is this. In skydiving, you're pretty much following the instructions. You jump out. You're like, you're going to pull the cord at this time. And then if something goes tragically wrong, okay, you're dead. But with hang gliding, you're doing maneuvers, you're spinning around, you're spending more time up in the air, you're colliding against trees. So I think more things can go wrong that can injure you.
You're right, hang gliding. One in 560 chance of dying. In skydiving, one in 100,000.
Wow.
So
that's incredible difference.
Hang gliding is way more dangerous
yeah.
than skydiving.
That's incredible. I actually didn't think it was going to be that big of a difference.
So, Berto, we got our Star Wars tickets.
We did.
Yeah. If you didn't know it already, there's a new Star Wars coming out.
It's the, let's see.
Episode 7.
Fourth movie in the series, right?
Yeah. And it is going to be awesome. And for Halloween this year, I'm going as Han Solo. I bought a very expensive costume online and painted a gun. You know, when you buy guns online, they
you can't.
They come in like white and orange.
Right.
And so I painted it black to
Careful.
Make it.
Careful. Don't get shot by the cops.
To make it look like Han's blaster. I actually looked online to see if I could buy a replica of Han's blaster. The cheapest one is like $10,000.
They used to sell them when we were kids.
I know. It's like, it's not that hard to make, but anyway. So I'm going as Han Solo, and I'm thinking about dressing up when I go to the movie. And so here's the deal. I am going, actually, to Cinerama. Cinerama in Seattle is like the awesomest movie theater in Seattle. It's huge screen, comfy seats. They serve beer and wine. They have chocolate popcorn. Does Paul Allen own that thing? Someone famous owns that thing, I think.
I thought he did, or he bought it first. I don't know who owns it.
They often have museum displays of like Captain Kirk's outfit and Nine's outfit from Battlestar Galactica, or Six. Six was the girl, right? So the ticket was $75. And
75?
Yeah, it starts with the prequels 1 through 3 starting at 1 a.m. in the morning on that Thursday. They play the prequels, and then they play episode 4, 5, and 6 starting at about like 10:45 Thursday morning. And then at 7 at night, they're going to show the...
Oh, shit.
The new one. Yeah.
So you're going to be crazy, like...
And then I'm going the next day with you.
Yeah. So you're doing this whole marathon thing.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to go, let me know. Come find me. And then also, if you want to join us at Sundance Movie Theater in Seattle, we're seeing it on the 18th at 4:10.
Yeah.
So if you want to...
If there's still tickets, you can...
If there's still tickets, you should join us.
I'll sell mine for $100.
I actually thought about doing that. because I'm like, there are still seats in this theater. This is going to be a primo ticket, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because the thing is now that you can buy tickets online in advance, you don't have to wait in line outside the theater.
For 3 days.
Like, you waited in line to see Phantom Menace, right?
Yes.
Like, how long did you wait in line?
I mean, it was an entire day, you know? Like, we got there super
Wasn't it a early. Cinerama?
Yeah, that's right.
And then you loved it so much.
No comment. Actually, I did love it at first. I was Stockholm syndromed into it.
The more I've been rewatching clips from the prequels this month, and I have to say, the more I watch it and the more I think about all the negative press from you and other people, I have to say it's starting to lose even the little bit
the
of
splendor.
Enjoyment.
Yeah,
I mean, there are certain scenes where I'm just like, my God, that was a wasted opportunity.
Yeah, you know, my hatred has subsided over time. We've talked a bit about this. It actually is weird what it had a deep effect on me, because so much, and I think many of my generation, right? Because so much of my youth, of my childhood revolved around Star Wars.
Yeah.
That was the topic. That was the thing. Those were the toys. That was the main game. Every time one of those movies came out, it was like the defining moment, right? So, and even to that level where I think, we've talked also, like, I was a little younger than you, and so it was even more real in my head. It was like, I almost felt like, no, that's history. We're watching history, right? So you fast forward so many years later, and you're like, oh my gosh, the dream. Now, and as an adult, I get to continue living this fantasy, right? And you put so much weight on that, and then you go and you watch it, and even if it hadn't been, like, quote-unquote bad, but it had just not lived up to expectations, it still would have been tragic, because my expectations were through the universe.
Right. Yeah, that's the way I felt about it, was that people like yourself had way too high expectations for what is just a movie. They were expecting a life-altering experience, and they got a mediocre movie, you know what I mean? But having said that, J.J. Abrams, who did the reboot of Star Trek, that was an amazing movie.
Yeah, really impressive.
I mean, I was thoroughly entertained, and I'm a Trekkie and a Star Wars-y person.
Yeah.
And I loved that. And so, after seeing the trailers, it seems like, I don't know, it just seems like it's going to be rad. It looks like Luke Skywalker is in it. I hear Luke Skywalker might die in it, is one thing. They have a woman lead and a black guy lead, which is interesting. And then they have Adam Driver as like the new Darth Vader. It's cool that they're bringing back essentially a Darth Vader character, you know?
Yeah.
And it seems like they're adding kind of a tragic element to Darth Vader. Because, you know, in the original trilogy, Darth Vader was just like this evil unknown, you know, you didn't know why he was the way he was.
Yeah, you'd only get that tragedy at the end of the return.
Right.
When you're like, oh, he was a man.
Right. Yeah. And so I bet you anything in this new one, they're going to have some comment on why the new Darth Vader becomes Darth Vader. Yeah. What's his, do you know the new guy's
Kylo name? Ren or something?
Yeah, Kylo Ren. Anyway.
I'm trying to stay away from information so that I can be virginal.
Yeah. Have you watched the trailers?
I have. I gotta say, this last one finally made my skin tingle. The previous ones, they hadn't yet done it for me. People were freaking the F out over the one with the Millennium flies up and stuff.
Chewie, we're home,
that one. And I watched it several times, and at first I thought, oh, it's probably because I watched it on my phone. But I watched it like my TV at home with the lights down, and just I really tried to get in the moment, and I still couldn't quite kindle that. You know what did it for me? When I went to E3 this year, and I went and I played and I saw Battlefront, the new Star Wars game. Oh, then I felt it. And then I think that brought back some of the spark in me.
Oh.
And then now I've watched this trailer.
The prequels snuffed out your spark.
It snuffed out the spark. But the video game, because
the video game is just essentially Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, and it has this like visceral moment in the what they were showing in this huge, massive screen. And it felt so real, and it was so awesome. Yeah. So that ignited like the how do you call that, the starter in the fireplace, the
kindling?
The kindling. And so then when I saw this new preview, I finally felt the tingle.
Yeah. Well, the new preview shows way more of the movie.
And the music.
Yeah.
The music was perfect. It was like
Yeah, like when the Millennium, I'm getting tingles. The Millennium Falcon is weaving through the fallen Star Destroyer.
Yeah,
and they play that tragic music.
Yep.
That, you know, that tragedy music they play.
Dun, dun.
Yeah. Like that. That's what. When
that's
that,
Leia's theme, I think.
Is it Leia's theme? It's like a sad song.
Yeah.
And so, it's just gonna be awesome. And by the way, the Battlefront game looks so awesome. I've literally watched gameplay videos for hours, and I bought a new Xbox One.
So you could
just so I could play that game.
Dude, we gotta play it.
Okay. I bought the Halo edition that comes with 1 through 4, like on it or something. Is Microsoft going to like a download version now? It seems like.
Well, they're still selling, but you can now get most games digitally.
That's interesting.
But you'll still buy a Halo 5 on disc.
Can you get me a copy?
No, I don't have pull with Microsoft. Why would I?
You don't know anyone?
Why would I know anyone?
Actually, I think I know someone who works for 343.
You did? Well, then ask them.
Yeah. But yeah, Halo 5 looks like it's going to be new too.
Yeah, Halo 5 is brand new.
Yeah. Sorry, everyone. This is not psychology talk. This is nerd talk. Although, let's just get into nerd talk. Sometimes I just say, you know what? Screw you, listeners. I'm just going to do nerd talk today. Have you seen Mr. Robot?
The TV show?
Yeah.
No.
You got to see
like
it, man.
Like a hacker or something?
It is really good. It's like Dexter meets House of Cards.
Mm-hmm.
It has a House of Cards cinematography to it.
Mm-hmm.
It also has, he's sort of like a Dexter character.
And he's like a computer guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's sort of like Dexter, and you hear his inner dialogue, and he feels really disconnected to people.
He's got like Asperger's or something.
Something like that. And he gets wrapped up in this, you know, scandal. And it has twists and turns to the story.
Okay,
so
you're endorsing this show. I should watch this.
I'm highly endorsing it. It's 10 episodes. It's really great. Yeah. Do you want to see? You want to hear the movies I've watched lately?
Oh yeah, because I watched some too. We should discuss. Compare and contrast.
I rewatched 12 Angry Men the other night.
The old original. Angry Men?
The old one.
Oh.
Guess what year that came out?
65.
57.
Whoa.
That's what I thought. I thought it was like 60s.
Yeah.
57.
That's crazy.
That is a long ass time ago.
Did it have Jack Lemmon in it?
No.
It didn't.
Henry Fonda.
Henry Fonda.
They're all dead, by the way. I looked that up. All the 12 Angry Men. Taken 3. Oh, so Angry Men on IMDb, I gave 7 out of 10. I mean, if I was to rate it on its importance, I would give it 10 out of 10. In terms of when it was made, it is an awesome movie. It's exciting. It has social commentary. It has a ton of social commentary,
totally.
Actually. It's like... It's totally like a limited premise in that, you know, the majority of the movie is just in this one room. It's like, how can you make that exciting? It's got conflict. It's a really, really good movie in terms of, you know, what it did. But in terms of just watching it, you know, I wouldn't give it a 10. But a 7, that, you know, it's pretty good. Taken 3, I gave that a 1. Ghost Town. Have you seen this movie? I rewatched it. This is like the third time with Greg Kinnear and Ricky Gervais.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah, Ghost Town. I gave it an 8 out of 10. I think because it's not only funny, because Ricky Gervais and Greg Kinnear are funny, but it also has some interesting commentary on human nature, Ghost Town. You got to see that movie.
It had Quincy. 12 Angry Men had Quincy.
Yeah.
Jack Klugman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who was also in where I know that guy from, not only from Quincy, is... Odd Couple.
And I think that's why I got confused, because wasn't there another Odd Couple with Jack Lemmon in it?
Yeah.
That's why I got confused.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Jack Lemmon was the prissy guy.
The prissy, yeah.
Yeah, anyway. I saw Bridge of Spies with Tom Hanks.
Oh.
The new
Steven
Spielberg movie. I gave it 7 out of 10. I might demote it to 6. It's good. It does what it set out to do. It's kind of slow.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically just about Tom Hanks. He's just negotiating this situation. Well, the first half of the movie is about him defending a Russian spy in America, which is interesting. And then the second part is him negotiating exchange of spies. And the most interesting part about the movie to me was the period piece aspect of it.
Right.
Because, you know, Steven Spielberg spares no expense and really researches it. And this was, I think, in the 50s. And
Cold
so,
War, like yeah. that kind of thing. Okay.
And you really get a sense for what was going on, not only in Berlin, but in the United States at the time. Wow. And so anyway.
Did you see The Martian?
I did.
Oh my God, we should talk about The Martian.
Let's talk about it. I gave it a 7 out of 10. I liked it a lot. 7 out of 10 for me means I like it.
I would give it, in my scale, probably a... do you do fractions? Oh.
IMDb doesn't let you do fractions.
Oh, okay. Well, then I would probably have to give it an 8. I would give it like an 8.5 if I could.
Yeah, I found that I didn't like it as much as people tend to like it.
Yeah?
I liked it. I think it's a solid movie. It was entertaining. I really like the science. I'm a super science nerd and... I'm a space nerd, and I study that kind of stuff. But there were some things about the science that were just so blatantly wrong that it was hard for me to overlook. Plus, his
like what?
Well, the sandstorm, the whole reason why he got stuck on Mars doesn't make any sense, because the atmosphere on Mars is like 1% the atmosphere that we have on the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
1%.
Yeah.
That's basically non-existent. There's hardly any atmosphere, hardly any air pressure, and it wouldn't be able to push over the ship. So anyway.
Oh, okay.
There's other things too, like when the thing gets blown off, you know, and he loses all of his crop and everything, spoiler alert, and he has to shore it up with plastic and duct tape. There's no way that would have held. Again, given the fact that...
By the way, you have to say spoiler alert before you say that.
Given the fact that outside of the HAB is basically a non-existent atmosphere. When you go from, what is that, 15 PSI or something for normal human atmosphere to basically nothing, that would never, ever have held. You know what I mean? You're thinking of 15 pounds per square inch that's pushing on that piece of plastic with duct tape. There were a number of things, and like when the climax where he ends up being able to fly himself to safety is extremely improbable. The ability to do that by punching your hand. I mean, I understand you have to have like a fantastic, you know, interesting ending, but
you liked Guardians of the Galaxy though.
Because they're not trying to.
But I mean, you gotta have some leeway for the
whenever I see movies like this, I'm holding them up to this high standard because they obviously have a lot of integrity scientifically, right? There's a lot of things in the movie that were actually extremely scientifically accurate in a way that they didn't need to be, right? And all they could have added an element to the story that could have really that's what always bothers me about these movies is like,
well, but for every one of you complaining, they probably had consultants that said, oh, well, you know, actually every 500 years there could be a freak combination of elements that could push over the blah blah blahs and the things and the, you know, you don't think they had some dude saying, yeah, probably.
Yeah, no, actually I've listened to two interviews, one with Adam Savage with the author.
Uh-huh.
And he said that because he's not a scientist, he's right. He's like me. He's just like a regular guy that likes science. Mm-hmm. And
the author,
yeah. And he, after writing it, not only realized some of his story was scientifically inaccurate, you know, just small parts of it, not a bit, but he also said that he changed it so that he twisted science to make the plot work.
Oh, okay.
Because he's ultimately a writer.
Yeah.
So he knew he was messing with science to make... He said he thought a lot about like the sandstorm and stuff. He was like really trying to figure out how to make this work. And it could only work if he totally threw science out at the window.
Because
he thought that people wouldn't notice, which no one did, except for people like me. That there are a number of other little details that sort of... bothered me in the way, but really, what sort of didn't elevate it to, I could have forgiven those things. What really didn't elevate the movie for me was the way that Matt Damon's character was so silly. Like, if they would have halved his silliness, I would have liked his character a lot more. Like by the 10th time, he's like, I'm going to science the fuck out of this thing. Like the 10th time he does that, I'm like, okay, that joke is getting a little old. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I do know what you're referring to. For me, it had an endearing effect because it was kind of
the
like
first
the
four times. The first four times, I loved it.
Yeah,
you know, I'm gonna science the shit out of this. I loved it. But after a while, it was like, dude, it's getting old. You know what I mean? Like you're hammering on that same, you know, comedic, you know, spot on my arm, and it's starting to annoy me. You know what I mean? It was a nice caress at first, but now it's just annoying me.
I mean, I kind of like what I liked about it was like, okay, in reality, could that come to pass? The odds are like zero, you know? And I mean, we can't keep people alive in freaking on an island,
right,
alone in Mars,
well,
right?
That was another thing, was that one of the main reasons why we'll probably never do a mission like this. In the near future anyway, is because of radiation.
Yeah.
You know, the Earth has a magnetosphere that protects us from solar radiation. And as soon as you go outside of that, including Mars, which has no magnetospheres, or at least it's not at the level that we have on Earth, you are constantly being bombarded with radiation and will develop cancer very, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And so until you rectify that situation, and we have no science for that right now, then you're screwed. Plus, they didn't really even talk about it because now you could almost say, well, he's in the HAB and they have some sort of shielding on top. They could have said that, you know, if you had some sort of massive weird, there's some sort of new ceramic thing that might be able to be thin and light and be able to protect people. But he was walking around outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's essentially standing outside of a nuclear reactor, just standing there, or with a microwave, just standing in front of a microwave.
And with a radioactive thing right next to him to keep warm.
Right. Which actually would not have been as much of a problem as the sun.
As the sun, yeah.
And so that was another thing that bothered me. But again, I just know that no one knows that or cares.
Well, I took a little different approach because I actually grouped it more with Interstellar. Isn't that the name of the other Matt Damon movie where he's in space? Right. Very similar, right?
Yeah.
But Interstellar went like to drove the sci-fi to 11, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not saying, oh, sure, the math works out with the stuff and the whatnots, but come on, like they had amazing spaceship technology and shit like that, right? So they definitely said like, no, this is in the future. Whereas this one was like, well, this one's in the small F future.
Yeah.
And so, but I still took it with the, all right, this isn't real. We're not going to be doing this. Now it's cast away in space. And so with that, I was like, I was entertained. I have a soft spot for Matt Damon.
I like Matt Damon too. Him and I are very similar in age, I learned recently. And so him and I and Sarah,
Silverman?
Yeah, Silverman. We're all like around the same age. I liked it too.
Yeah.
I also didn't like the NASA director played by Jeff Daniels. I thought his character was strangely written.
You know what was funny is I couldn't not see Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I saw Dumb and Dumber 2. And guess what number I gave it?
You gave it a 6.
I gave it an 8.
An 8?
I thought it was hilarious.
Well, it was hilarious, but okay, I could see a 7.
When a comedy is good, I will reward it with a high rating because people will demote good comedies just because, well, they're comedies.
No, I get that.
But to make a good comedy where I'm laughing the entire time.
Well, what did you get Dumb and Dumber?
Okay, so I'm talking with my friend about this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I must have given Dumb and Dumber a high
9.
Rating too, right? I gave it a 2.
Oh, come on.
But I saw it 20 years ago.
Sure.
And rated it 20 years ago.
Sure.
I've been rating on IMDb.
Oh,
actually,
okay.
I was giving movies ratings on an Excel spreadsheet before IMDb.
Okay.
And so
you had a different barometer entirely.
Right. So I guess I need to rewatch it.
That's a dumb movie, so.
Well, I don't know. I mean.
Like, look, the original Dumb and Dumber, it was one of my, oh my God, that's a new funny standard when it came out. Like, There's Something About Mary was one of those. American mm-hmm. Pie was one of those. These are all silly movies, but they made me laugh, like, heavily. Right?
There's Something About Mary is also made by the Farrelly brothers.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it as well. I just wouldn't necessarily rate it higher than its original. Because they borrowed a lot of the jokes, and they, you know, there's a lot of nostalgia in it too and stuff like that.
Another thing about the Matt Damon thing was the Jeff Daniels character annoyed me a little bit. Again, I gave it a 7 out of 10. I liked it.
So for you, 7 is good. This is very good.
That is a solid movie.
Yeah.
I love the fact that there was no fucking love interest for Matt Damon, which always pervades American movies, which always drives me crazy. Which I loved. He didn't have a family to go back to. He was just a guy who wanted to get home.
And actually, that made it pretty pretty honest in the sense that the fact that you were able to care about this character without those like manipulative aspects.
That always drives me crazy. Another thing I really liked about it was that there was no conflict between the astronauts. You know, I was like, okay.
Jealousy. And
at some point, there's going to be a, someone's going to throw a punch, and there's going to be a this, and there's going
to
be a that.
We have to go back for him. No, yeah. I will.
Yeah. Some kind of comment on like how humans are inherently crazy and that astronauts can never work together, or men and women can't work together, or you know what I mean? There always has to be something.
Yeah.
And there was none of that. It was just astronauts working together that were pals. But the Jeff Daniels character, I was just like, how more cliche could you get? You know what I mean? Like, his character was written just really strangely. Another thing that bothered me was in the book, there were two Asian characters.
Oh, you read the book?
No, I've since learned there were two Asian characters. I mean, they weren't explicitly Asian, but they had Asian names.
Mm.
So, you know, like, I think one was named Park, which is often a Korean name. And in the movie, they're not played by Asian people.
Oh, they had two Chinese people in the movie.
They did. one of the rocket guy, he was a Chinese American guy.
Which one?
He was a tall Asian guy. He was one of the engineers. He was like Scotty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you got I can do it in 12 months. You got 3 months.
You got 3 months.
He was
I'm
Asian.
Giving her all these guys.
But there are more Asians. And again, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, we need representation, but I'm always bothered by this removal. You know, it's like we had you didn't have to insert them. They were already there. And you removed them and replaced them with a black guy and a white woman.
Yeah.
And it's like, there are plenty of Asian actors out there that would have been fine. Totally. Why take them out?
What's our buddy from Karate Kid 2?
Oh,
He's awesome. The bad guy in Karate
Yuji
Kid
2. Yuji Okamoto.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yuji Okamoto is the bad guy from Karate Kid 2, and he owns a restaurant here in Seattle. And I didn't know that he owned this restaurant.
And he's like the nicest guy.
Yeah, he gave me a free spam musubi, which was rad.
Although when you mouth off, he kicked our asses, remember?
I know. I did the crane on him. Another part that kind of bugged me in The Martian was when they were like, how are we going to slow down? We're going too fast. In my head, I was like, blow the airlock. It's obvious. And they're like, this one guy's like, I have an idea. And someone's like, what? And he's like, well, we could blow the airlock. And the rest of the crew's like, no, what? And I'm thinking, if I came up with that idea as soon as the problem came about, surely these astronauts would have thought it even faster than I would.
More to the point, that's got to be protocol. That's got to be like listed in the protocol. But here's
it's
one thing.
It's an obvious source of thrust.
But one thing is like, you probably feel about these kind of things because it sounds like you read a lot in these topics and stuff like that. Like if I'm watching a movie and they start doing computer like programming or something like that, like I'm always like cringing. I'm like,
oh,
what are they saying? Don't say that. Don't do that.
That's another good thing about Mr. Robot is there's none of that bullshit.
Oh, okay.
None of it. Even though the entire show is based on hacking, there is none of that crap. In fact, there's even a scene where they're watching, I think, Hackers the movie or something, and they're making fun of it a little bit.
What? Okay, now I don't like the show. I love Hackers. So did you see The Visit?
Is that a horror movie?
It's okay, so I don't know if I've expressed my loathing for what became of Mr. Shyamalan's movies after.
Oh yeah, this is a Shyamalan movie, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you know, I
actually have liked almost all of his movies. I didn't see Avatar. Have you seen Devil?
Yes.
That's pretty good.
It's okay.
I even like the one in the woods,
The Village.
The Village.
So
I never saw The Lady of the Lake.
Terrible.
But
boring as hell.
But The Village, I kind of liked.
So the problem. Okay, so
Signs, I enjoyed. I'm sure if I saw Signs today, I would hate it.
No, and here's what happened.
I loved Unbreakable.
Of course, the guy. What's the guy great at? The guy is great at setting up these really tense, stressful situations, and then these like moments of surprise and shock. Right.
I heard he went back to that formula.
Yeah, and in a great way. Because first of all,
don't ruin it.
No, I'm not gonna. Sixth Sense was amazing because it was so well paced. It was so surprising. It was all these things. Right. Unbreakable brand new take on what a superhero could be and all these things.
Right.
The only thing
back when superheroes was not a thing.
It was out of the picture.
Yeah.
By the way, the only thing I didn't like about Unbreakable, it's just a small detail, but it annoyed me, is at the very end, spoiler alert, when he's talking to Samuel Jackson and the big, it was the children. They call me Mr. Glass. You know, that whole little scene, it was a little over the top for me. But overall, the movie's great. Signs comes out. Now, Signs, I was so disappointed because I saw the previews and it was all about crop circles, right?
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God, how awesome. Because at the time I was in love with this guy, Shyamalan, right? I'm like, what is his take on what crop circles are really about? And then the movie comes out and it's about aliens. And you're like, wait, okay, well, all right, fine.
Yeah.
What's your twist? Yeah. And then as the movie progresses, the things he does fantastic, those moments where you're like first hearing the footsteps outside and you see the thing, that's great, right? Yeah. It's really good tense.
Everything was great until...
That lasts like 20 minutes, right?
Until you find out what's going on.
Yeah, and then you see the aliens are all naked, and then everything's super contrived. It's like, why were all those glasses of water? Because they happen to be allergic to water in a planet that's mostly water. But anyways, so that one really like started losing me. And then after that, The Village was okay, but I unfortunately, like, that was one where I saw his twist coming, and for some reason that really annoyed me. And then after that, his movies got a little weirder.
I didn't see it coming.
But anyways, and then people who saw Avatar,
I haven't seen it.
Hated it.
Okay.
With a passion. Okay. Anyways, I thought I was done with Mr. Shyamalan, right? And he comes out with this thing.
I think Devil is it's one of those limited premise movies.
Right.
I mean, that's a hard movie to make because doesn't the entire movie take place?
In the elevator.
Yeah.
Like they're all stuck and stuff.
And it's just five people.
That's right.
And I thought it was pretty good.
So I'm sitting there. I haven't heard anything about it. I haven't seen any previews. And then I decide on a whim to like, oh, I guess, you know, it was like one night I could go see it. I'm like, I'm going to go see this movie. And I was pleasantly surprised because it didn't rely on gimmickry and like crazy shit. It was a straightforward jump out of your seats suspense movie, you know? And in the stuff that he does so well, which is set up those tense
isn't it like
kind of
a
situations.
A grandma comes and visits.
The basic premise, a 15-year-old girl and a 10-year-old brother, they have never met their grandparents. They don't know why, because their mom left when she was 19 and she never speaks why or whatever. And they found where they live online, and so they forced the mom to say like, hey, we want to meet our grandparents. So they go traveling by themselves to go meet their grandparents in a totally different state or something like that. That's how it starts.
Mm.
And then weirdness ensues.
Mm.
And the weirdness is great. And it's tense and stressful. And you definitely have great jumpy moments. And although there's like quote-unquote twists and stuff.
So it's not like horror, like Paranormal Activity or something.
I'm not going to say like too much about it. What I'm going to say is it's a legitimate movie. The guy's redeemed himself in my eyes. I was pleasantly surprised, very enjoyable. I jumped out of my seat several times.
I saw Walk of Shame. I gave it a 5 out of 10.
What's that one?
It's Elizabeth Banks, and she goes out on the town one night, and she loses her cell phone and her car keys, and she has to make a really long walk of shame back to her home, and she can't get back home.
It's a comedy?
It's a comedy, and she's trying to make it back because she has an opportunity for her career.
Which one's Elizabeth Banks?
She's
is she the wife in 30 Rock that goes kidnapped in Russia or something?
She was Jack Donaghy's young girlfriend,
the
blonde one.
Okay.
Yeah. I rewatched Boogie Nights.
One of my favorites.
I only gave it a 7 out of 10.
Really?
I think when I saw it when it came out in 97, I absolutely would have given it an 8 or a 9. But and it's still a very, very good movie. But it seems to have, I don't know, it just doesn't have the, it's a funny movie. It's
did it
silly.
Lose some inches in the process?
Yeah. It's a great movie. It has all the things you want in a Pulp Fiction-y P.T. Anderson kind of movie. But it just doesn't have the weight, I guess, of a movie that I want for to elevate it, you know?
You know why I love it? You know why I would give it at least an 8?
Why?
Because it's got a certain song in it.
Oh yeah. Oh no, wait.
Yeah.
That song.
That's
the
song.
Oh, you're a lonely boy. Yeah.
And the scene is very well prepared, you know.
When that came out, I was like, oh yeah. I rewatched B Movie with Jerry Seinfeld that plays a CGI B.
Yeah.
Give that a 6 out of 10. It's pretty good.
It's not as bad as people said it was.
No, Metascore was 54.
Yeah.
I watched a movie called Death of a President. This was really interesting. I'm surprised I never even heard of this before. Have you heard of this movie?
I don't think so.
06, so 9 years ago, some British people make a movie about a fictional account of George Bush being murdered.
Is this the one with Jeff Daniels or something?
No, I don't think so. They basically, they made it. It's a documentary, mockumentary style movie where George Bush gets assassinated and then Dick Cheney becomes president. And,
oh, whoa.
And they're interviewing the Secret Service guys and other people. And it's... And then, you know, things happen afterwards. And it's actually kind of prescient in terms of like Syria is involved. And, and they try to find the killer and they're interviewing Muslim people. And
what'd you give it?
I gave it a 5 out of 10.
Oh, okay.
It, you know, it's fairly low production. You know, it's not made by the greatest of filmmakers, but I thought it was interesting. And then, of course, Dumb and Dumber 2, I gave an 8. A movie called Life of Crime. It came out 2 years ago that was sort of under the radar, but even though it has Jennifer Aniston and Tim Robbins and a guy I really love, John Hawks, and Mos Def is in it. It's a period piece from the 70s where, I don't know, I thought it was pretty good. I gave it a 7 out of 10, Life of Crime, Jennifer Aniston.
Sounds familiar.
It's a comedy in which Jennifer Aniston is a housewife and she gets kidnapped.
Oh, I saw that one.
Okay.
I did. I knew it sounded familiar.
Okay.
I kind of liked it.
Okay. I saw Unbroken, which is about the American who he's a marathon runner in the 30s, and then he gets enlisted.
Is this based on a real?
Yeah. He gets enlisted.
Oh, I remember the preview. He's lifting some log or something.
Yeah. It's directed by Angelina Jolie and written by the Coen brothers. Yeah.
Directed by Angelina?
Yeah.
Good?
And very good. I gave it 7 out of 10.
Holy crap.
It's a you know, true account. It's not very fast. It's fairly slow because essentially it's just him experiencing a lot of horrible things. And you just can't believe how many horrible things. Like, you think you know, oh, yeah, I could see how many horrible. No, he experienced it because there's a whole the main thing I remember from the preview is that he gets captured by the Japanese and he's in a prison. But that's the last third of the movie. Oh, he experiences a whole lot of shit before that.
Whoa.
A lot of horrible things before that.
But you know what, though? It's not surprising that Angelina would be a good director because she is a graduate, an alum of Hackers.
I saw, rewatched The Island with Scarlett Johansson and Ewan McGregor.
It's directed by
Michael Bay.
Isn't that based on Philip K. Dick short story?
I don't know. But when I first saw it back in the late aughts, I gave it like a 7 or 8. I rewatched it and in fact, I'm going to demote it to like a 3 or something.
Whoa.
Because I when I rewatched it, the first like third, it's an okay movie. But the last part is just all Michael Bay. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, just think Michael Bay when he didn't have the budget really yet.
Yeah.
And it's just terrible.
Oh, out of curiosity, what do you know what you gave Gattaca back in the day?
I probably gave
Ian,
that.
Or what's his name? Ethan Hawke.
Yeah. I gave it a 9 out of 10.
Nice. It's a great movie.
Yeah. I saw Everest. It's that one about up in thin air or whatever.
Wait. Because there's several. So there's the up in thin air. There's like a documentary.
Is
this the recent one that came out?
Yeah.
Oh, with Christian Bale, is it? Or?
No. The main is Jason Clarke. And also they have, what's his face? Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, Jake Gyllenhaal. That's right. Okay, so...
But Jake plays actually a very minor part. The rest of the people are... for the most part unknown.
Okay.
I liked it. I saw it at Cinerama and it's 3D, and I sometimes grade movies on the way I feel afterwards, and afterwards I felt affected by that movie. I felt like I was very happy to be on sea level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I felt like the weather had attacked me in this movie, and it seemed like an accurate portrayal of what it must be like. But the thing is the whole time, half the movie is building up to the climb, and then the other half is them having a comedy of errors that eventually happens where a lot of people die. And it's a true story. And all I kept thinking was, These people chose to do this.
Yeah.
So I don't have any, I don't care. They knew that people die. Many people had died on Everest prior to that. So I'm like, I don't really care.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah, that guy died. Well, he knew what he was getting into, and I'm sad for him, but it's like if someone plays Russian roulette and they get shot in the head, it's like they chose it.
Yeah, I was less interested to see it because, I mean, it feels like forever ago that I had read the book. I had seen the IMAX documentary about Everest in which, during the filming of which that tragedy happened, I had seen the documentary about the book, and I had seen the movie that they had made about the book that had, a couple other semi-famous actors too. But this was like 10 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I've seen that story so many times now, but. So what did you end up giving it?
I gave it a 6.
A 6, okay. I will say when I read the book, that thing you were saying about feeling like you're so happy to be in that's how I felt when I read the book. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I heard the book was really good. I also saw Life Itself, which is a documentary about Roger Ebert.
Oh, yeah.
Highly recommend it. There are some very uncomfortable scenes of him without, because he had cancer in his jaw, I think.
Oh.
And he had his entire lower jaw removed.
What? When?
Later in his life.
Oh my gosh.
And there's a lot of footage.
And reattached?
No. So there's a lot of footage of him literally with no lower jaw and he can't talk, you know?
So this is obviously after he retired from the TV and stuff.
Right.
I never knew that.
Yeah. And then he passed away. And
holy
so
crap.
They used all this footage. But it's interesting because he lived a very interesting life. You know, to us, it's just like, oh, he was the thumbs up, thumbs down guy. But he had a fairly interesting life.
It's so bizarre that they couldn't do some sort of prosthetic or something.
I think he actually didn't want to.
Okay.
I think he easily could have said, look, don't film me. I think he wanted people to know or something.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Saw another movie called Time Lapse. It came out last year. Total low-budget movie. It's basically a long Twilight Zone episode.
No, I've seen that.
Have you seen it?
Wait. Time Lapse?
Where three people are in an apartment, and there's a camera that every day will spit out a Polaroid of what will happen 24 hours in the future.
No, actually, I have not seen that. That sounds interesting, though.
It is interesting, but I gave it a 5 out of 10, which means it's watchable, but okay. I wouldn't recommend people watch it.
I thought you were talking about, there was another movie, I saw it on Netflix. Some people are at a party, like a dinner party, and something happens in the sky, like a comet goes by, and then weird shit starts happening where like kind of parallel universe or something. You know what I'm talking about?
I think
it's,
I've heard of that.
It's like the, I forget what it's called, but anyways, I thought that was.
I rewatched Ruby Sparks, which came out 3 years ago with Paul Dano and his wife, Zoe Kazan,
Ruby Sparks.
Who actually wrote and directed it, I think, Zoe Kazan. You know Paul Dano, right?
No, what?
You know Paul Dano from There Will Be Blood.
Who is Paul Dano?
From There Will Be Blood.
But who? Is that the kid?
The kid.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just don't know his name.
Oh. And when I first saw Ruby Sparks, I think I gave it a 10 out of 10. And when I rewatched it, I was less taken by it. Mm-hmm. And I gave it an 8 out of 10. I think it's a great movie. I highly recommend Ruby Sparks, by the way. It's basically a romantic comedy, and it's an interesting premise. Essentially, this writer writes a character into existence.
Whoa.
He writes like his dream girl into existence, essentially. And it seems like the sort of movie, hijinks. It's like, it's more than that. You know, it's more tragic, I guess, in some ways.
Yeah. By the way, I had a surreal experience recently. You don't read graphic novels, do you? But you've watched The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm a fan of the graphic novel.
Yeah.
And the new collected, you know, edition of the latest issue basically came out, and I bought it. I was reading it at the Pike Place French Bakery, you know, down there in Pike Place Market.
Uh-huh.
I was sitting down reading it, and I had music playing in my headphones.
What was it, La Campagna or Three?
The little baguette place with the desserts and yummy
next
stuff.
Next to the Starbucks?
Yeah, that's right. So I'm sitting there. It's like on a corner, you know?
Yeah.
It's across the street from Beecher's.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm sitting there and I'm playing, and this music's playing in my headphones, and it's Pink Floyd. It's
I was going to say, if it was like Nirvana, you'd be having a perfect Seattle moment.
Perfect Seattle moment.
But, reading a graphic novel, sitting in Pike Place.
So, but it's playing Dogs from the Animals CD.
Sing it.
No, I can't sing it. It's hard. I don't even know how it goes, really. But it's really creepy sounding. And I'm getting towards the end of this book, and it's Walking Dead, and I'm not gonna spoil it, but shit hits the major fan, and it gets really gruesome, and the music is like in this crescendo of gruesome, and so I kinda like, it spaced me out a little bit, because it's like you don't expect the confluence of stimulus from what you're reading and what you're listening to.
They should have soundtracks,
right?
To graphic novels.
Yeah, they totally should. And like they do the Pink Floyd. What is it? The Dark Side of the Moon to Dorothy to the Wizard of Oz. Yeah. You know that whole thing.
Yeah.
They should have pairings like sommelier type pairings for music and things.
Yeah.
Music and media.
I saw Black Mass. Have you seen that?
Is that the
Johnny Depp about?
Oh, yeah. No, I haven't. Looks good.
I gave it a 7 out of 10. I thought it was pretty good. It wasn't amazing, but
Is Johnny Depp convincing?
Yeah. In the previews, it looked really unconvincing
because
he had those blue contacts in and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is going to be dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But in the real movie,
he does a good job.
Yeah. It's not the. Okay. Well, I was worried about the makeup, actually, but his makeup wasn't distracting in the actual movie. But the movie is interesting because it's kind of like a watered down version of those kinds of movies. Like, there's not a lot of action, you know?
It's not a Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, it doesn't move quickly, you know, and so because they're trying to do a real story, you know. But I actually read some accounts from actual people that were there, and they were saying the movie actually played down the violence and the horribleness. Yeah.
Whoa.
I mean, they said that we were way more brutal than they depicted in the movie.
Holy shit.
Which is like, whoa. I watched Transformers Age of Distinction.
What?
Another Michael Bay movie. You know, every once in a while, late at night, you're just like, you know what? I want to watch something without having to think. And I don't know why I get in that mood. I feel like, don't you ever get in that mood? I just want to watch something that doesn't require any thinking.
Totally. Is that the one with Marky Mark?
Yeah. It was terrible. I gave it a 1 out of 10. Right from the word go, it was just like Michael Bay up in your ass, man. It was just like terrible. Expendables 3, same thing. 1 out of 10. Just crap.
Okay, that one I disagree with.
Have you seen it, Expendables 3?
Yeah, I love Expendables, man.
But listen.
This is kind of like, it's not a fair thing, right?
No, let me tell you. Fair. I know what you're going to say. Machete. Have you seen Machete?
No, I didn't see Machete.
That is a good movie, and that's in that zone. But Expendables 3, I can tell Sylvester Stallone takes this seriously. This is not silly to him. He's trying.
There's a shit ton of inside jokes, though. But
he's trying to come across like a tough guy. He's trying to make it. They're trying to make basically a Fast and Furious kind of thing where...
But totally tongue-in-cheek. I mean, like Chuck in the second one, Norris shows up.
Machete. That is a movie that does it right because that is total tongue-in-cheek and explosions and manliness.
I will say this. Of the three, that one was the most boring, and I would give it a 5. But I was still entertained. How much did you give Expendables 1?
Probably more than 1.
Hopefully, because that was very enjoyable. Didn't we watch Expendables 1 together?
I haven't rated Expendables for some reason.
I think we watched it together in Vancouver.
No, I think we watched Expendables
2.
I'm just going to by default give Expendables 1 a 5 because I remember liking it for
it. Was fun.
For its,
I don't disagree, though. Expendables 3 is way worse than the first two.
It was unwatchable. I watched Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, the new
one. Oh, my God. I loved it. I loved it. Look, I had a love-hate relationship with Mission Impossible because the first one that came out destroyed my childhood because I loved the TV show.
And they turned the hero of the TV show into
the bad guy in the movie.
Oh.
Spoiler alert. Now, as a action movie, was it okay? Well, sure. Although the helicopter scene was totally ridiculous.
You're talking about Rogue Nation?
The very first one.
Oh.
Mission. But fast forward, they started getting pretty interesting.
Yeah, I like the John Woo version.
Yeah, they started getting pretty interesting. I got to say, this one, I was on the edge of my seat. Action-packed from beginning to end.
I hate to do this to you. I gave it a 4 out of 10.
No!
Which basically means if you're bored and you don't have other movies to watch, sure, watch it. 4 out of 10 is, you know, four
That's
out of
ridiculous.
10. But I'm trying to remember why I gave it
it's
a 4
It's a
out
better
10.
Bond movie than the last two Bond movies.
Don't even get me started on Bond. Straight Out of Compton?
Oh, that was I saw that movie 3 or 4 times in the theater.
Yeah. For some reason, I only gave it a 7, which is, again, high. It's a solid movie.
I am definitely not going to claim that movie is a 9. I would give it an 8 because of the significance and because, you know, it was a well-done movie, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I learned so much.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I learned a lot, yeah. I think I didn't give it a higher rating because, again, it just didn't have like a major point to it. Like usually, like for something to elevate it, it has to have something kind of magical about it. And to me, it was a fair and non-cheesy represent or recreation of what happened.
Yeah.
And I was really happy that they didn't ruin it with sentimentality and silliness.
One thing that was very poignant for me, and I'm sure many people, is you could have imagined seeing that movie. Imagine a world in which we see that movie and we're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that we were having such problems with the cops back then.
I know.
You know what I mean? And then you watch it today, 2015, what that movie was set in 1990, right? Like the beginning of it. So it's incredible sad that you're like, whoa, we're still dealing with this stuff.
I know. Amy, the documentary, gave 7 out of 10. We talked about, we had a whole episode on that.
Yeah.
Comet. Have you heard of this movie? Justin Long. Have you heard of this movie? Do you know who Justin Long is?
Yeah.
Sam Esmail is the writer-director. He's actually the one who created Mr. Robot. But it's basically about this couple that meets and the movie sort of jumps from different times and parallel universes. And it's just basically a romance.
Oh.
And it's basically just the two of them talking, sort of like Before Sunrise or something, you know?
Oh, but in like weird...
A lot of philosophical talking between the two of them and them falling in love and this sort of thing. But then they jump from different time zones. And you don't know if they're jumping to different parallel universes or they're just jumping
to... Interesting.
Or they're just jumping to different time periods of their relationship.
Did you like it?
I liked it. I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Wow. Okay.
It really affected me. Comet. Okay. Comet.
Comet.
I rewatched Fletch from 1985, Chevy Chase. When I was a child, for people that don't know this, you know, we were talking about Star Wars earlier.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to this guy who's 29, I think he would be right now. Actually, Danny, you know our friend Danny.
Yep.
He might even be listening to this episode. I was talking with him and we were, you know, I was telling him about all my Star Wars Han Solo outfit, you know, buying... you know, $75 ticket to watch all 7 movies over the span of 24 hours. And he's just like, whoa, you know, and he's like, yeah, I mean, I like Star Wars, but I was born after, you know, it was all over. And so I was thinking, well, you must have something. And we're trying to come up with something.
Right.
So he would have grown up in the 90s and we're like, well, Saved by the Bell. And he was saying that he really loved Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, but that's nowhere near.
Yeah, everything we came up with.
A video game maybe?
No, there was nothing.
On the order
of Star Wars. You know, Star Wars, you had 3 humongous movies.
Yeah.
You had all the products. You had all the spinoffs. Yeah. You had all the talking and all the everything.
Yeah.
And
a Christmas special.
And so you and I, in our generation, are... truly one of the only generations that has something like
something
this.
Something that magnificently big.
Because to him, Star Wars is just another movie. You know, it's just like, yeah, it's a movie. Great.
Maybe now Minecraft is something like that for kids.
Yeah, maybe it's something around that. Yeah. Like in 20 years, there'll be like tons of Minecraft memorabilia.
Maybe. But Minecraft doesn't have the story.
Well, that and... only a certain percentage of people play Minecraft. Do you know what I mean? It's not every...
It's a pretty big percentage, though.
But it's not every child.
It's not every child.
The way Star Wars
Not
is.
Around the world.
Right.
Know?
There's a good percentage, but it's not everybody.
I wonder if it'll be Star Wars again.
Yeah.
Because of the new movies.
Oh, maybe.
It's kind of hard, though. There was a confluence of the right time. Like, think about what the 70s were all about, you know? And it was like the coming together of the emergence of the human civilization as a technological civilization, coming together with the emergence of the visual realm of movies in a super colorized and effects heavy way.
Yeah.
And when there wasn't anything like that, it's just like many perfect storms.
That and the fact that there were so few things that we could watch.
Yep.
I mean, we had three channels that literally turned off at midnight.
Yeah.
And for...
And then
for,
the quality level was just so high.
Yeah.
At the time, especially.
Right. And everyone saw the same things back then.
That's right.
I mean, if, you know, Happy Days.
Yeah.
Everyone watched Happy Days. It was just a thing. You know, everyone watched it Tuesday night, you know, da, 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 da. So getting back to Fletch. When I was a kid, Fletch was a phenomenon. You know, Chevy Chase was a phenomenon.
Yeah, he was huge, huh?
And so I rewatched it thinking like, oh, this is going to be a classic. It's going to be like Back to the Future. It's probably going to hold up. I'm probably going to like it, you know? Because I remember as a kid thinking it was kind of an adult movie, you know?
Yeah.
It was kind of geared towards adults. Rewatched it. It's total shit. Have you seen Fletch the movie?
Yeah, I love the book.
The book's probably amazing.
The book is pretty good.
Have you seen the movie recently?
Well, 15 years ago.
No. You got to rewatch it because he is the most annoying character I gave it a 3 out of 10. I didn't give it horrible. But he is one of the most annoying characters that's ever been on the screen.
Ace Ventura.
He's constantly sarcastic with everyone. You know that guy that always cracks jokes and thinks they're funny, but they're never funny?
That's me.
That's Fletch. He's constantly, from beginning to end, cracking jokes that aren't funny and thinking he's so funny. And we're supposed to think he's so funny, but he's not funny, and he's annoying everyone around him. That's the synopsis of the movie.
But it worked at the time.
I know. When I was a kid, I remember liking it, but as an adult, it does not. I mean, how many people talk about, have you seen Fletch? I mean, how many people say that?
Or it's probably like, try to watch Porky's.
Right.
Try to watch Porky's.
Yeah. But
you sit through Porky's?
I was 9, you know.
Can you sit through Porky's?
I haven't watched it.
Like, I don't think we could actually sit through Porky's unless we had some beverages.
Yeah. Another movie, Welcome to Me with Kristen Wiig. This is an underground. It came out last year. Kristen Wiig, huge star.
Yeah.
She makes this movie called Welcome to Me, and it should have been huge. Have you heard of it? I gave it 7 out of 10. It is funny and poignant. It's a good movie. I highly recommend it. Welcome to Me. It's about kind of like she's supposed to be autistic or something, like Asperger's, and she wins the lottery and she loves Oprah.
Oh.
And she's obsessed with Oprah. She's memorized episodes of Oprah. She puts in VHS tapes recites the entire episode by heart. And so she wins the lottery and she doesn't know what to spend her money on. And so she creates her own Oprah show.
Whoa.
But because she's so weird, weirdness, you know, commences. But it's actually kind of poignant.
Anyway. Interesting.
The Gift with Jason Bateman and a new guy, Joel Edgerton, that I really like.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How do you like have a secret? Like, you know how Hermione in the third movie has that little thing that lets her double her time, her hours?
Yeah.
How do you watch so many movies?
I don't know. Have you seen the movie The Gift?
No.
It's pretty good. Gave it a 7 out of 10. Sort of a psychological thriller. I liked it because it rode the line pretty well. Essentially, you're always wondering, it's like, is this guy an evil? Anyway.
The Gift.
And it's actually kind of a comment on bullying. There's a bullying theme.
Oh, interesting.
Very heavy bullying theme.
Did you see, it's on Netflix, I think, A Girl Walks Alone at Night?
No.
It's like a Middle Eastern movie, slightly supernatural. I'll say that. Uh-huh. It's a little boring, but also, like, I kind of forgive it because it's like an international movie, you know, but it's also pretty good. It was recommended to me by a buddy, and I watched it. I was like, that's interesting.
I started watching Flash, the new Netflix series.
Yeah. How's that?
It reminds me of Smallville, actually.
Okay.
It kind of seems like it's trying to appeal to younger people, but it also kind of reminds me of Joss Whedon. It has that kind of funny character development, you know, sort of tongue in cheek stuff. I watched the first episode. I always like the origin story of these different superheroes.
Can you even tell what's going on, or does it go by super fast?
I kind of liked it. You could take it but again, some of the science in it is just so dumb. Like they're analyzing some tissue sample from some guy that is an evil guy, and he puts it on this thing, and then on the computer screen is this very beautiful graphic of like things moving around, and it's just like, that doesn't exist. And plus, that's not, anyway. And so they're looking at him like, okay, whatever. And they're like, oh, stem cell, blah, blah, blah. And then the final thing was, they're only found in babies. Was like, these are scientists. And they're like, stem cell, blah, 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 random scientific shit, blah, blah, blah. They're only found in babies. And it's like, no, they're not. And why do you need to say that? Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, that's what an ignorant person thinks about stem cells, is that they're only found in babies.
Brundlefly. Do you remember Brundlefly?
No.
In The Fly, the movie The Fly with Josh Goldblum.
God, it's been, I actually haven't seen that since.
I loved that movie.
I kind of, every once in a while, I actually almost rewatched it on Netflix the other day, but I'm kind of scared because isn't it kind of gross?
It is gross. It's probably not going to hold up to your memory. I have seen it more recently, and I still like it, but in a nostalgic way.
Yeah.
But I, as a kid, I loved it, and it scared the hell out of me.
The Act of Killing, a documentary about Indonesia and all the killing that went on. Have you seen this doc?
Mm-mm.
It is one of the most bizarre documentaries I've ever seen.
Mm.
So essentially, and they don't even explicitly tell you that this is what's happening, but these documentary guys go to Indonesia to talk about this genocide essentially that happened in Indonesia like 10, 20 years ago, or I don't know when, maybe it was 30 years ago, anyway, a while ago. And what they find is some of the propagators of the killings, like one of the guys who killed thousands of people, he's just a regular guy on the street now. He's just a regular dude. Because they totally eradicated everybody.
Oh my God.
And so the winners won.
Yeah.
And now they can talk about the killing because they're the ones in power.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so essentially I think it's like, well, anyway. And so he starts talking about, you know, how he killed people. And it's just like, you're listening to these descriptions and you're just like horrified. And then he's like, you know what? In order to really make this documentary work, we're going to have to recreate this. And so he goes on this long, elaborate thing, getting lots of people involved and extras, and they get costumes.
Oh, my God.
And they recreate these killings and massacres of, like, children and
with
show
the people
it.
That did it?
With the people that did it. So the people that did it, of massacred thousands of people, are recreating the killings.
Oh, my
God. For the documentarian people, because they want an accurate portrayal of the awesomeness of their massacres. And then they start going into this bizarre direction where they start creating a dream sequence that involves like a humongous fish. Like the fish is as big as a building, and there's like
wind,
and this one guy dresses up in drag.
Is this done by the Indonesians, or is it?
The documentarians, I don't think are Indonesian themselves.
Okay.
Themselves. I think they might even be American.
Holy crap.
But it is,
what
it is,
did you give it?
It's on Netflix.
What did you rate it?
I gave it a 7 out of 10.
7. Okay.
Because it's kind of boring at parts. It's it's 2 hours long. It should have been maybe 1 hour long.
Mm-hmm.
Because they kept, there was too much footage that they wanted to keep, which I understand. But a lot of it was like, okay, this is unnecessary.
Speaking of the people that killed, they're still around. So, you know, in Colombia, the whole Escobar thing.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the main killers for him, his alias was Popeye. And he went to jail because he was one of the ones that turned themselves in towards the end. And he served, I don't know, 20 years in jail, maybe 15 years or something like this. But he was directly responsible for like, I think it's like 300 to 500 people, himself, killing, and ordered on the order of like 3,000 to 5,000 murders. And so these are I don't know what you call them, like mass murders, massive mass murders, right? But there's all these
mass murder
doesn't cover it.
Encapsulate they're genocidal mass murders.
But he served his sentence and he's free now.
Yeah.
He's free and he gets interviewed, and so I've watched a lot of these interviews with him.
There's an asterisk on that. Other countries let people out way sooner than is what I'm comfortable with.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
That's crazy. Like, yeah. I mean, like, first of all, anyways, it's just hard to comprehend.
In the States, we would never let a guy like that out, ever.
I mean,
Charles Manson killed you know, 10 people or something. Right. And
like think about this. Like if you get out, say in 20 years, say 50 years for killing 1,000 people, then if you kill one person,
yeah,
you don't have to serve us a year.
Should be in there a week.
Yeah. So like, I mean, this is ridiculous. Anyways, but it's scary to just like listen, like you're saying, because he describes, and the guy doesn't come off as a psychopath, although he says he describes kind of what traumatic things as a child he saw that actually excited him about blood and stuff like that. But other than that, like he describes, and you're just listening to this and you're like, this guy's free. And he did all these things.
Well, how do you feel about that? Do you think he should have been left in jail to rot?
Absolutely. The whole penal system, like we could go on for ages because like I guess Norway has some better system than that is not as punitive or whatever. Right. I don't know, right?
But yeah, I mean, scientifically, I agree with the way other countries do it in that it's like, well, what's the purpose of the prison system? Well, the purpose is to reduce things like this from happening, right? And the way to do that is not necessarily to lock people up forever.
Yeah. It's just that, like, what's hard emotionally is, like, look, there's no forgiveness. Like, I'm sorry. Like, after you kill one person, maybe based on the circumstances, let's have a conversation in, like, 30 years or something. You know, when you've killed, like, multiple people,
yeah.
When you've killed hundreds of people,
right.
When you brought a country to its, like, come on. What are we talking about?
It seems like Colombia would want to deter other people from doing this sort of thing by keeping someone in prison for the rest of their life.
But the irony is that is how they in their mind, that is how they did it, because at the time they made deals with them for them to stop the massacres.
Yeah.
It's like the reason the massacre stopped in large part is because they finally said, fine, we won't extradite you. And look, just confess to one crime, serve some years in prison, and
we'll let you go. Know. Right.
And unfortunately, we're like, many of them fell anyways because they got killed, yeah. Like Pablo, and most of them actually did. So he was in the minority of the ones that actually turned themselves in, went through their sentence, and...
You know, when you say thousands of people, do you know what I think of?
What?
The fact that we have tens of thousands of people listening to this podcast who are not patrons of the podcast yet.
Oh.
It makes me want to kill all of them.
That's a fair sentiment.
So if you're not a patron of the podcast yet, go to patreon.com.
Let's see if that survives the cutting floor.
Oh, it'll stay in.
Oh, my God.
What? You think that's a bad selling technique?
No, I'm sure they'll be intimidated into it. Dr. Kirkonda says...
I'm going to go Escobar on your ass unless you become a patron of the podcast. Well, we got to one tougher bluff, and then we just talked about...
Veered.
Star Wars and all that other stuff. So... Listeners out there, let us know if an occasional episode like this is enjoyable to you, because if it is, then every now and then we'll do something like this.
That's right.
Because Berto and I can talk about culture and other kinds of nerdy stuff.
Apparently ad nauseum.
Ad nauseum. And you can write in and ask us to comment on various things. Also, remember that we have the official mug for deserving listeners, which has a bunch of photos. It's like a collage mug, and it's a good size with a good handle. And
spiffy handle.
It costs a lot of money, so you have to become a $20 a month pledger in order to get it. Or I suppose you could just send us, I don't know, 20, 30 bucks, and I'll just send you one. So let us know if you want the official Psychology in Seattle mug. Because it's pretty rad. Berto is banging on it right now.
Hey, are you going to offer more t-shirts to people too? Do we need a new design, a new color options?
Yeah, we should do t-shirts too. We got to figure that out.
Yeah.
I was also thinking that, Berto, you could call people on the phone.
Ooh. Like, excuse me, dear sir or madam, do you have 5 minutes of your time?
No. Pledgers of the podcast, you could actually call as a reward.
Oh, I see. It's not a punishment.
Yeah.
And hi.
And you could just like riff with them for a
bit. What if on the phone I sound totally different? Hey, how's it going? This is Humberto. What's up? Oh, yeah. No, I talk different.
You should totally do that. Every patron that you call.
Hello?
It should be like a it should be a different weird. You should just call and just say the weirdest stuff to them.
I'm like, yo no hablo inglés. No, eso solo es el podcast.
Yeah. We do have Spanish. That's another thing I want to point out, people. We have a lot of foreign patrons. Come on, Americans. Step up to the plate.
Well, you know what, though? I'm going to vote for Trump. So after that, we're not going to be able to have foreign patrons.
We're gonna have this big wall erected and stuff.
Well, that does it for another episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us. Please take care of yourself because you deserve it.